Hello and welcome. I'm Alexis Brooks, author of the Higher Journeys blog and freelance writer. Here at Higher Journeys, we cover a broad range of subjects within the metaphysical, spiritual, and new consciousness genre. We explore areas ranging from social psychology, philosophy, and evolution to exciting breakthroughs in the new sciences to the paranormal. In my over 10 years of researching and writing, I've had the pleasure of meeting with and interviewing some of the brightest and most prolific minds in the field. Typically, however, my work culminates into the written word. Today, we've decided to try something a little bit different for Higher Journeys. We bring to you our first audio interview. Recently, I had the pleasure of speaking with David Sarita. David is a brilliant thinker on many levels, and our interview, which was originally planned as a written article discussing breakthroughs in solar technology, became such a broad and intriguing discussion, I thought to do it justice, I just better let you hear from David himself. For those of you who aren't familiar with David Sarita's work, he's a filmmaker, photographer, author, and public speaker. He's also a well-known space scientist, physicist, ecologist, and spiritual explorer. He has planted over 1.3 million trees in Canada, spoke in Congress for Clean Fusion Power in 1993, marketed sustainable housing, breakthroughs in oil spill cleanup, solar, wind, and hydrogen technology. He has appeared on hundreds of radio shows, such as Coast to Coast AM, If It Rocks with Alan Handelman, Whitley Strieblers Dreamland, and worldwide on many TV shows such as CNN, Fox News, ABC, The History Channel, TLC, and The Sci-Fi Channel. David has studied many religions and spiritual disciplines, including Christian mysticism, Buddhism, Hinduism, yoga, Judaism, Islam, Sufism, Pythagoras, for over 30 years, and he's met and studied with many meditation masters from the Far East. His goal is to inspire and teach other people about how they can have their own enlightening experiences and how they can use meditation and prayer to heal on many levels. I've heard David speak many times, and he never fails to inspire and impress with his intelligence, inventiveness, and enthusiasm. So sit back and relax as we hear from David Sarita in our discussion about breakthrough technologies on our planet, including new discoveries with water and the sun to earth changes and the future. As we all know, there's a lot going on right now, and David has a lot to share with us. Talk a little bit about how you got started in researching the water aspect or the consciousness of water, and then kind of go from there.
Well, I have to say, firstly, I was influenced and knowledgeable of the work of Dr. Masao Emoto on the effects of consciousness and very focused or intentional consciousness in water. And what they do is they take a very pure environment and they first measure the background or ordinary state of water. And they do this a number of ways. One of the most photographic measurements is when you cryogenically freeze the water so fast, it's like a shutter on a camera.
Right.
It's frozen and you capture the crystalline structure or, you know, either harmonic or very chaotic structures of the water based as a background experiment. And then you bring in meditators or people of different types of consciousness around water, and then you cryogenically freeze it again. And they can actually take a sample of water that's been exposed to a violent riot and wrap it in tin foil, which seems to block any interference while it's in transport, and then it gets cryogenically frozen and photographed. And what's amazing about the studies is that when you have a really beautiful, harmonious thought, the water appears to be responding to it. It seems to go from a very chaotic background state to a very beautiful, harmonious structures. And the structures are really dependent on the type of vibrations the water is being exposed to. When you look at, you know, religious prayers, it's really amazing when you look at the religious prayers from the different world religions, because you can see the differences in the structure of the water around the different world religious prayers. And I have to say they're all fairly beautiful, but there are some prayers that are more coherent and have more amazing structure to them than others. They're not all exactly equal. I mean, they do have a beauty to them. but they're not exactly the same. Now, when we, you know, I started getting involved in this, and we met the producers of the movie Water, The Great Mystery from Russia. Mm-hmm. Aida Medvedeva is the director-producer, producer, actually, not director. And, you know, this film was leaps and bounds beyond in quality anything we had previously seen that Emoto and other people had done. In fact, Emoto was only one of numerous great researchers on water in the film.
Right.
And I was so excited about it. I learned that the film sold 3.5 million copies in Russia. And the Russians are very, very excited about consciousness, as well as the German audience. And I thought it was going to do really, really well here. So we put the movie in theaters. We partnered up with some of the producers from What the Bleep Do We Know, and we thought it was going to be a huge hit here. And everybody was going to, you know, like this movie. But the movie critics are so uneducated. They literally just panned the movie and gave it horrible reviews and called it pseudoscience.
Isn't that something? Now, that's
and
just ignorance.
Wacky science. And we have, you know, we have Nobel Prize winners in there. We have other physics prize winners in there.
Of course.
And, we have very respected scientists from Austria, England, like Martin Chaplin from England, is one of the greatest researchers on the structure of water in the history of the world. And that's what the media said, and it really hurt the film. It really didn't do as good as my other film, like Quantum Communication did.
Which I saw also absolutely fantastic. Kudos on a magnificent job, David.
Well, you know, it's exciting work. I went, you know, I started to get involved with some of the scientists and was doing my own studies on you know, comparing the human body, which is about 80% water.
That's right.
And it's both its liquid crystal state and its salt crystal state. Our bones are phosphorus, calcium, and you know, trace minerals. We're very similar to the circuits that are inside of your iPad or your laptop computer or your computer.
Mm-hmm.
In a computer, you have literally at this point billions, 2.2 billion transistors in an Intel computer chip. And transistors are solid-state quartz crystal with some, you know, conductive metal in these layers that produce this amplification that crystals actually give to give us all the different colors and all the different tones of sound. And the more transistors you have working, the more multi-tones of color and you know, power and generation that you have in your laptop. And our bodies are very, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Our bodies are liquid and solid-state crystal. And this is an interesting point because we're a combination of solid-state crystal with the calcium and phosphorus and other minerals in the bones surrounded by a moving, you know, liquid plasma of blood and water and minerals in the circulatory system, and in the nervous system we have neurons firing through kind of a biochemical network of wires. It's really amazing.
Mm.
When the first transistor was developed by William Shockley, John Bardeen, and Will Bratton in the early 1940s at AT&T Labs, these guys, AT&T Labs was actually pursuing this kind of stuff, but these guys were working independently, and they found that crystals, solid crystals, had all these extra electrons floating on the surface, and they had these little holes, what are called semiconductor holes in them, where this mysterious energy seemed to be coming out of the crystal. I mean, nobody could really satisfactorily explain the mystery of the semiconductor holes in crystals.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, most good physicists today who work in the solid-state area believe that we still haven't even tapped the power of the crystal yet.
Now, we're talking about minerals in terms
like
of
quartz and
crystals,
gems,
sure.
Which
absolutely.
Are, you know, each gem, when you go through like a ruby and you go through a garnet or a diamond, they're all just, they're basically different types of crystalline material.
That's right.
And yeah. And actually, everything is crystalline, including metal.
Mm-hmm.
But the early solid-state physicists were, you know, we had radio tubes back in those days in the 19, early 1900s and the late 1800s when Tesla invented radio, and Marconi followed Tesla, actually, they had a problem of how far you could transmit wirelessly a radio message. And it wasn't until the transistor was born that you could do that. Mm-hmm. You could actually transmit very, very far. If you remember in the 1960s when transistor radios became very popular, it was like, wow, you could really hear the news and the baseball game and the ballet on the radio. You could hear everything really clearly. Mm-hmm. And transmissions could go very, very far. Well, that's because of a crystal. But what's interesting about the connection to the body as a liquid and a solid-state crystal is they couldn't get the first quartz crystals and the first germanium crystals to work as transistors. They thought, according to all their math and their physics, it should work. You just have to run this wire, very, very thin plate of gold, a hair's breadth above the crystal, and it should catch the electrons, which are the carriers of the electric force, like passengers jumping onto a train, mm-hmm. and you would have a mini amplifier. It didn't work. They put it in water, and voila, the whole thing worked. They went, oh, my God, we're getting amplification with the whole thing sitting in water. And that's very much like a living system, like a human body or an animal or mammal. You have, basically, you have the whole combination of solid state, bone material surrounded by liquid moving material. And that's how the first transistors work. But they couldn't really do that because the water crystals would dehydrate.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said they couldn't get it to work. And years went by. These guys had a really hard time with this. And by 1947, they actually figured out that they had to have the gold wire touching the crystal. And they had amplification. And the whole world changed because of that little invention.
Wow.
Well, consciousness works in a very similar way. We can, the way the transistor allows us to amplify signals, radio signals, is actually happening on a micro is a millionth of a watt scale.
Yes.
That's how weak they are. That's how weak a transistor. And today's transistors, because there's billions of them, are weaker than that. Well, what I started to do in my studies is measure human body voltage.
Mm-hmm.
And see if we could affect the human body voltage system and the human amperage system, and see an increase in energy in a person by exposing them to harmonically, quantumly treated crystals that I developed a quantum technology to program crystals with the NASA sound of the sun, with the mantra Om and other many other harmonic numerical codes that I developed over the years.
Wow.
And we could see a huge change in the person's energy field, both on aura cameras and also on voltmeters, when a person came in contact with one of our harmonically treated biotransistor pendants that we actually now sell.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing to see this actually happening when there was no actually electricity stored in the crystal.
Mm-hmm.
There was just harmonic vibrations that the crystal got exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And a piece of crystal that was not exposed to the harmonic vibrations had a little bit of an effect on the person, but not as much as this. And what I'm getting at here is, firstly, we know that consciousness can transmit information like a radio transmits your voice or music wirelessly through the ether, and it shows up, at a distant location on the planet, traveling at the speed of light from one point to another.
Mm-hmm.
And we can have communications on the internet all over the world now. We can have all of this is happening through wireless medium.
Right.
Using crystals in the transistors and crystal oscillators, which is another little component in radios and computers.
Right.
Nothing in electronics today would work without crystals.
That's right.
The body's advantage is that scientists like William Tiller, in my film Quantum Communication, and he was also in What the Bleep Do We Know, found that the human organism and plants and anything with water in it, which is essentially a liquid crystal,
mm-hmm.
combined with some solid state. Solid state just means crystals that are solid. They're no longer in a liquid state. Crystals have the ability to transmit consciousness, thought, and intention over amazing distances. William Tiller does this famous experiment where they take a group of meditators who have the intention to raise the pH value of water several units, and they trap that intention in fruit fly larvae, and it becomes a biochemical hard drive to store that intention. And the reason they had to do this is they couldn't get a single meditator who could hold an intention with a memory long enough for there to be any, you know, quantifiable effects. So in other words, water and consciousness is constantly, we're constantly having a positive thought, and then you just can't, you know, hold a positive thought.
That's right. It is difficult to sustain
For 30 days, because what happened in Tiller's experiment is it took 30 days, but it didn't matter where they put their target water, even over almost 7,000 miles away from the fruit fly larvae, the pH of the water did exactly what the instructions were given. Mm-hmm. They even tried to lower the pH of the water, and sure enough, it did. And that through, you know, thousands of miles of rock, you know, traffic and radio signals and all this, you know, radio pollution and wireless pollution that's out there.
Right.
Every single time, the target responded within 30 days to the consciousness that was trapped in the biochemical device.
Mm.
Now, that is phenomenal. Phenomenal, because a radio signal can't do that.
Right, right.
A cell phone signal can't go through even a really thick concrete, you know, parking garage where you park your car at the mall very well.
That's right.
And let alone travel, you know, halfway or a third of the way around the planet and produce the result at the exact target glass of water that you intended it to
right.
do. So consciousness has this advantage over radio signals, and not only can it go through all these barriers which radio signals can't go through, they started measuring the time signal on the communications between plants. Like Fritz Albert Popp, a great German biophysicist, actually proved that all living things are emitting biophotons or particles of light that are emitting off of living systems, human beings and plants and mammals and animals, everything that's alive. And he found the origin of the signal was the DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting. So the DNA is at the center of the cell, and the DNA is surrounded by all the mitochondria and all the plasma and the cell wall and the membrane of the cell. That's where the signal that's faster than the speed of light is coming from.
Quick question, David, for you. As you mentioned DNA, I have so many thoughts about what you're talking about. I have heard that DNA in and of itself has a crystalline pattern. Is that true?
Well, see, crystalline goes all the way back to all of the greatest physicists you can think of, from Einstein and Dirac and dozens of other ones you've probably never heard of. All were studying crystalline structures, what are known as the structures of the way atoms bond in pairs and triads and quadrads and multiple geometries to make up the geometries of everything we know on the periodic table of
mm-hmm.
elements.
Mm-hmm.
So from gold to silver to lithium to even helium gases, you know, all the noble gases and everything under the sun that
yeah.
is a chemical makeup has a crystalline structure at its base. And it's the way atoms bond in geometries that everyone was measuring. I mean, Einstein was deeply involved in crystal research, and no one was more baffled than the experts at the way different geometries, which corresponded to different elements, responded.
Mm-hmm.
Usually their math predictions were all wrong mm-hmm. most of the time, and there were properties of materials that baffled them so deeply they never really got to finish what they had started back in those days.
Wow.
In the late 1800s and early 1900s, because World War I and II came along and swept these guys away onto weapons. So when they measured those geometries, it's known as the crystal lattice or structure.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at that structure, you look at, okay, when you're looking at larger structures like, you know, frozen snowflakes and frozen water responding to human thought, it's a very similar thing.
Yes, of course.
It's on a way bigger scale. because you go from atoms to molecules, which are pairs and, you know, multiple bondings of different atoms that are bonded due to these little guys called valence electrons. And then those make up bonds, and chemicals bond with each other, so you get all these multiple, you know, not every element on the periodic table remains alone. They bond with each other, and you get all these unique compounds. And they all have structure.
Mm-hmm.
So consciousness appears to affect the structure of water, which means it's lattice, which is the way the molecules are bonding and behaving,
mm-hmm.
way all the different water molecules come together, is so incredible that that's actually happening. But you can only observe it happening on liquid state material, which is water.
Right.
And water is not just hydrogen and oxygen. There's always minerals involved in water. Water always contains sodium and salts and potassiums and minerals, trace minerals. So which means there is the potential for electricity to be involved in what's going on.
Right.
So I just did to contact the producer after we had distributed the movie for a while, and I said, you know, the sound of the sun in the most ancient religious material on the earth, known as the Vedas, the Rig Veda, is the mantra Om itself. This great mantra that many great ancient meditators from the Rig Veda actually comes from Turkey and Iran, and it migrated its way into what is now known as India.
Mm-hmm.
And this great mantra in the Bhagavad Gita says that if anyone who attains this mantra attains everything, it is the great, you know, Maha great mantra. And so I took the sound of the sun because NASA had recorded the sound in deep space.
Yes, I have the recording.
Which you normally can't hear because the waves are too long.
Right.
We only hear between 20 and 20,000 hertz. It's way below 20 hertz, but they compress the waves over several a long period of time into the audible spectrum. So it's the same information, but it's hitting you at a faster rate.
I see.
And we exposed it to water in Russia. And I got this email on Valentine's Day several years ago that the researchers had never seen anything like it, that the sound of the sun restructured the water to a degree of harmony they had never seen. It was so perfect, the crystalline structure, and so beautiful. The only thing that could possibly compare to it would be some of the best holy water samples they've ever tested.
That's amazing. I need to ask you a question at this point, too, because this will get me into something I'd planned to ask. So they were absolutely astounded by the sound of the sun's effect on the water. One of my questions was, David, would you say that that method would be even more potent than the feelings of love, you know, feelings that are coming from the human system having an effect on that water? Would you say that the sound of the sun is even more powerful in structuring or restructuring the water?
Well, I would have to say yes, and that's only, there's not enough research that has been done on true, highly evolved meditation masters. I mean, I've been meditating every day for 33 years now, and,
mm-hmm.
and I, you know, can still, even though I can go into samadhi states and I've been out of body and I've had meetings with masters, I still consider myself
a
beginner compared to, you know, the great masters, of course. And nobody has tested their, you know, effects on water because we haven't had access to anybody like that in this movement. But considering the sound, you know, even Dante Alighieri,
mm-hmm.
great Italian mystic, when he did his out-of-body journeys and documented them in the Divine Comedy in the Paradiso, he saw all the greatest, you know, enlightened beings out-of-body traveling to the sun. There are other very great mystics that confirm that, like Pythagoras. When Pythagoras heard the sound of the sun, he also described the great luminaries that could travel to and from the sun. The sun is not just a physical being. I mean, the mantra that it's the sound that it's created is there's more in the sound than just, like, you know, musical sound.
Right.
Even though it's like a deep, throbbing, pulsing sound. You know, what we started doing is I built these quantum energy generators that I ran the sound of the sun through to program our first crystal pendants with. But then I went much, much deeper. I started looking, like I looked at the actual numbers in the geometry in the frozen water crystal of the Sound of the Sun. I started looking at the geometries of nature, which are all these uneven-sided geometries. Like if you slice an onion open, you'll see four little, in a red onion, four little, like they're like wave patterns. What we call in science, in physics, a quadrupole magnetic field. You'll see in a tomato, you'll slice your tomato, and you'll notice the geometries are, there's four little spokes in your tomato, sometimes five, and they're uneven. Well, I look at the uneven numbers. I look at ratios, because everything in music is based on uneven ratios. You can't have everything at the same ratio. And, you know, humans make geometries even-sided, which is actually flawed. Nature never, never does that. It's always uneven. And so I started looking at all the numbers in the codes, and I started to find these everything from the vibrations of electrons to subatomic particle physics measurements to flowers. And I found that the Fibonacci, the very famous Fibonacci codes, did not rule the universe. They were common. But there were other numbers that were even more prevalent in nature. And I started finding what Archimedes, the great mathematician who preceded Pythagoras, the infinity numbers, which are the 1 to 1111111, 1 to 2222222, 1 to 999999.
Right.
And infinities require two or more frequencies to play off of each other to create a resonance between the two. It's like the difference between a cello and a violin. When they're both playing, there's a quality that emerges that's not present with either one. And that, those are called differentials. And I've done all this math on them, and I developed a crystal core electromagnetic transmitter, which we put into a flashlight tubing with some rubies and tourmaline and some amazing, exciting things in there. And I plugged it into an amplifier, and I started transmitting first the sound of the sun through this wand. And these things are actually available for people now. And I had a client who had a little daughter at 3 years old, fell off the dryer one day, and broke her left arm and shoulder, and she never recovered. She could never move her arm at all.
Wow.
For a year, and I said to them, you know, this is pretty expensive to build this. It's not terribly expensive, $1,700, and I sold her one as an experimental device, and she used it for 3 months, and her daughter, for the first time, where all medicine and medical doctors and operations failed, she can now move 33% movement in her arm and fingers.
Wow, amazing.
Using the sound of the sun through the transmitter.
Through the transmitter,
that is miraculous stuff. I mean, that's almost, I mean, it could get me in trouble in the mainstream medical world, but it's experimental. There are no microwaves coming out of my transmitter, which I've measured with meters. There's a very powerful magnetic field, but no microwaves. And microwaves are harmful, but not magnetic waves, and certainly not low-end radio waves. There's no evidence that. In fact, Royal Rife, the great medical doctor, discovered that there are a lot of radio frequencies that can actually heal and destroy cancer cells. So then I started putting all my harmonic codes through my wand, and I came up with this theory years ago that the Great Pyramid was a giant crystal oscillator transistor.
Sure.
On a huge scale, as opposed to transistors today, which are so small you can't actually see them. A single transistor today, you need a microscope to see it. And I did a bunch of math on the Great Pyramid, and I decoded its crystal oscillation frequencies, and I transmitted them through my wand, and I went, oh my God, there's something in this magnetic field that I've never seen before. And I put ball magnets on dishes. And normally with the sound of the sun, the ball magnet on the dish will vibrate and spin. It's almost like the sun's information is causing all the planets in the solar system to spin on a magnetic wave rather than a gravity wave. But when I put the pyramid frequencies in, the ball magnet starts zipping around on the dishes.
Oh, my goodness.
And I never, there's no single frequency that could do this. So I made a video. It's, if you go to YouTube and you look up Spaceman 99, scroll down and you'll see my pyramid video there. You can actually see this happening. And it's so astounding to think of what that means. It's traditionally frequency devices have been used for alternative healing on the body.
Mm-hmm.
But differentials are frequencies. They are multiple frequencies working in tandem to create spaces between them that causes energy to move. So a frequency can stimulate a biological cell structure and activate it, but differentials can cause the energy to move up and down along the nerves and really get the energy going.
Wow.
So now I have about 20 users out there now who have bought these wands, and they're using them. And some of them use them just because it expands your meditation. It makes you go into a bliss state a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
It changes the energy of your house. You can a sound wave, like when we expose the sound of the sun to water, it can only momentarily restructure the water to that degree.
Right. I want to talk about that.
The magnetic wave can restructure the water for a much longer period of time. So we've been doing that with it. And we've had people, an elderly woman bought one to try it for back pain on her husband, and she had these fingers that were cramped up. It's a disease that actually attacks the tendons,
mm-hmm.
and she can barely open her hand, but she put the flashlight tube wand in there, and it's plugged in, has a 25-foot cord, and she started using the sound of the sun on her husband's back, and his back got better, and all of a sudden she could move her fingers for the first time in years.
Wow. How was she using the sound of the sun? What was the application? Was she just playing it in the presence of her husband?
No. She's using the wand.
Oh, she was using the wand.
You can't hear it. It's going through this transmitter with the rubies in it and the tourmaline and it's kind of a secret technology that's inside of it. And then I started using the harmonic codes of the Great Pyramid before sleep, and both my wife and I would both have out-of-body experiences that were so beyond the normal background dreaming state. And divine encounters. One night my wife was taken out, and she was shown a great being who was showing her earth changes that were about to happen, that were coming up on the earth, and he showed her these three great events that were about to happen.
Wow.
I've had, so many experiences with the wand. It's kind of like being in the presence of a holographic pyramid.
Sure, yeah.
And you think of the Great Pyramid, and if it's a crystal oscillator creating these frequencies in an analog mode as opposed to a digital mode today, then it's like if the pyramid is producing these frequencies that I decoded in the math, and I've decoded 180 of them now, and they can move my magnetic balls all over the plates, then it's probably creating a holographic pyramid around your house or your office or wherever you use one of these things. So what we want to do now is, considering what's happening in Fukushima in Japan,
mm-hmm.
and this enormous amount of radiation that has migrated into the western, United States and Canada, and even parts of Europe they're now finding mutated flowers up around the Great Lakes areas and in California and Oregon. And Canada, the U.S. government studies on the seaweed off the coast of everywhere from California all the way up into Canada are unacceptably high levels of radiation in our seaweed. And Fukushima now, reactor 4 is so critical. If you look at enenews.com,
mm-hmm.
You'll see the news on reactor 4 that it's supposed to have 33 feet of coolant in it. It only has a foot and a half left. It has enough cesium in it to, if it explodes because it goes critical, it's only got a foot and a half of coolant left. Actually, it doesn't even have that much anymore. The coolant won't stay cool. It will explode, and it will release 85 times more cesium than Chernobyl did.
Oh, my goodness.
Not to mention uranium and plutonium.
Wow.
Which have all been detected at trace levels in the vegetables in California and Oregon right now. So if that happens, we are in so much trouble here.
Oh, yes.
Let me tell you something. I don't know how far this idea will go, but at Princeton University, scientists were able to cause light, which normally travels at 300,000 kilometers per second or 186,000 to 282 miles per second, to go 300 times the speed of light by sending multiple light beams into cesium gas.
Hmm.
This is really phenomenal when you consider the Pleiades star system is 440 light years away.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can accept the radio signal to 300 times the speed of light, you could actually get a message there in a fraction of time compared to what a radio signal would take, which
right.
is 440 years. Well, I started to realize that what would happen if you could transmit harmonic information like the sound of the sun back into the cesium at the nuclear reactor? Well, it would, first of all, theoretically accelerate to very, very high faster-than-light energies, but it would restructure the information. The reason DNA is ripped apart by radiation from radionuclide particles that travel like dust and raindrops all over the world from these nuclear incidents is the structure information inside of the radiation is not harmonic to biological systems, so it rips DNA apart.
Mm-hmm.
Once you rip DNA apart and you mutate a cell, because cells divide asexually, they divide mutated, and that's cancer. That's why radiation causes the human body or other living systems to get cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, since Fukushima has happened, we've got seals off the coast of Alaska and the Aleutian Islands. Their brains are bleeding. They have these lesions all over their bodies.
Wow.
We have radioactive fish. We have, you know, 1,400 dead dolphins washing up on the beaches in Peru. And
in Massachusetts, on the Cape, actually, there's been a rash of dolphins being washed up.
Right. And there's a number of possibilities, you know, sonic, you know, the Marines.
Right.
The Navy doing sonic testing that could be contributing to that. But, you know, what would happen if we put my transmitters into a liquid crystal, which is what the ocean is, because the ocean is salt. Salt is crystal.
Crystalline, of course, that's right.
In fact, experiments done on transmitting electricity in salt water versus fresh water versus demineralized water. In demineralized water, you get a very weak signal transmitting electricity, and in mineralized water, you get a good signal, and in salt water, you get an excellent signal.
Hmm.
If we could build these things, 1,000-pound versions of my transmitters, and transmit the Fibonacci codes, the sound of the sun, into the ocean, we could possibly restructure all of the damage that the radiation is causing.
Sure, I absolutely...
We have to get thousands of these transmitters, but the signal travels at the speed of light, so because you're talking about an electromagnetic signal.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as you put one transmitter, you know, if the Navy put them, you know, off the Hawaiian Islands and you put them off the Japanese Islands, that signal will travel with the speed of light. And if you build these transmitters large enough, you can put many, many thousands of watts through the transmitters, and it will send total harmonic information back into the ocean.
That's amazing.
That's my dream. That's where I want this to go now, even though it's very, you know, people like that are you know, they'd rather see everything die.
Yeah, I know. It's just, you know, now we're...
If I could get, you know, Scripps or the Cousteau Society to look at one of these things, somebody there might do experiments with it to see in a local polluted environment. There, like I said, there's no better medium to transmit information through than salt water.
Right. That makes perfect sense. Yes.
If you're transmitting signals like the Fibonacci, you know, when people get my wands, they get the sound of the sun, they get the Great Pyramid frequencies, the infinities, the Archimedean infinities, and they get the Fibonacci frequencies. And there's like 28 Fibonacci frequencies pulsing all at once.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of similar to the sound of the sun, but it's the Fibonacci numbers, but it's much more gentle.
Okay. How much is the wand? I'm just curious. How much is the wand? I'm assuming anyone...
The wand is actually the same price as there's these crystal amethyst beds out there that people lie on, which are nothing other than an electric blanket running through some amethyst. They're $1,700, and considering what it is, you know, it has rubies in it and, you know, tourmaline and some very expensive materials, and they're handmade. That's a pretty good price, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, that leads me to another question. It's so interesting that we're talking about crystals. I mean, I think all of these things are fundamentally the same thing. in terms of having consciousness. Now, you're obviously far more adept at this, far more than I am, but I have been working with crystal energy for, oh my gosh, probably a decade or so. I've always had an affinity for their beauty, but have also, I think, on a deep level understood that we are crystal ourselves. And as a matter of fact, I just did two articles on the physics of crystals and you know, really trying to dispel some of the misinformation about how and why they work and really getting down to the physics of why they work. So one of my questions I had, and I think you've really answered it in an elaborate way, is if we were, let's say I couldn't get this wand right away for $1,700, but I wanted to expose certain crystals directly to the sound of the sun. What's taking place there? I mean, I've actually, as a matter of fact, I have a citrine, a pure citrine, not a heated treated amethyst, but a citrine that I exposed to the sound of the sun. And I could actually sense a stronger vibration after exposing it for probably two rotations. Because I bought your CD or MP3, but could we do that? I mean, would we get some benefit if we were just to put the crystal in front of the speaker and play the sound?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, first of all, you know, sound crystals respond through a medium called piezoelectricity, which is mm-hmm. pressure.
Right.
So if your speakers have enough pressure, then the crystal, it will activate the crystals and the electrons in the crystal to vibrate in that manner.
Sure.
Momentarily. not, it won't be able to memorize it, but in the moment, it could do something very interesting with the sound of the sun. My wand is not good enough for treating pendants the way we do, because that's a much, much more powerful technology. I wouldn't want to expose a human body directly to, because to get crystal to memorize vibration is much harder to do than what the wand is. But again, the wand, momentarily, if you put your crystal correction around it, the electrons, when you ionize a crystal, this is in old solid-state physics, the electrons jump out of their shells and they start spinning in their orbits.
Hmm.
That's what's known as a crystal oscillator.
Right.
Crystal oscillators, like when you had a quartz watch and it said quartz timing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You have a little piece of quartz crystal in there that produces signals at about 36,000 hertz or 36,000 waves per second. And that's why it keeps such accurate time, because a second won't go out of 1 second until it's somewhere beyond the range of the 36,000 limit time bound limit. Once again, the most accurate clock in the world in Geneva is the cesium clock.
Mm-hmm.
They're using cesium, which is radioactive, you're talking about in Fukushima, because it vibrates at several billion waves per second. So
mm-hmm.
it keeps timing so accurate that a single second will never go out of alignment for several, I think it's millions of years.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some positive uses for some of these radionuclides if we know how to use them.
Right.
But we you know, nuclear reactors just pump out heat to generate turbines to produce electricity, so we don't really use those elements in a harmonic way, and we actually could if we were feeding these streams in. So to answer your question, I mean, there's pyro and piezoelectricity. These are the most primitive understandings of the early crystallographers and the early solid-state physicists. Pyro is heat, so when you heat a crystal up, it gives off a little bit of energy, depending
right.
on the type of crystal.
Mm-hmm.
Lithium-based crystals are going to be really high energy, so are magnesium, like terpene. Golden citrine, Konstantin Korotkov, who has developed the most advanced aura camera in the world.
Yes, I'm familiar with it.
He's in the movie, Walk the Great Mystery. He started measuring the auras of different gemstones, and untreated citrine is extremely high, quite high in energy. The yellow topaz was actually the highest energy one he found. But he didn't test all the gems. He tested a number of gems, and the yellow topaz, which is really expensive stuff.
Right, I know.
It's like a diamond, if that's how expensive it is. It's really high energy.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second highest energy stone was garnet.
Okay.
But there's two different types of garnet. There's
right.
rhodolite garnet, and there's
Grosser Garnetter's.
Yeah, and if you look under chemical formula on Wikipedia, you'll see, you know, why. It's a very, garnet is a very elaborate chemical signature, and garnets are relatively cheap, I mean, compared to a yellow topaz.
Mm-hmm. And then citrine is in that category as well in terms of...
Citrine is quite high. Uh-huh. Strangely, amethyst was the lowest energy he tested.
Interesting.
But amethyst is, I mean, when he says lowest energy, sometimes the lower frequency crystals are better for the body than really, really ultra-high frequency crystals.
Right. Well,
the higher the frequency, the higher the energy.
Right.
So if you say amethyst is lower energy, it's lower frequency, but the body is a very low frequency device. It's not... It has higher frequency components to it, and it even has faster than light components in it, which are frequencies that are not even measurable by today's instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why we probably can't measure, like, how does Emoto get a meditator or a group of meditators to affect the structure of water's liquid state crystal, and when you freeze it, you can see in its solid state that you have affected it.
Yeah,
and if you have a negative thought, it will be very erratic looking, and a positive thought, it will be very beautiful.
Well, phenomenal, yeah.
The reason mainstream scientists doesn't believe it's happening is they don't have an instrument that can measure size scales of waves that small.
That's right, yeah. Dana Zohar, who is I'm a fan of, a physicist and philosopher, made a quote in, I don't know if you ever saw the documentary Life After Life, on HBO back in the late 90s, and there's a quote that I forever use, and obviously the argument is there life after death? And she states that, you know, science denies people experiences because they don't have the instruments to measure it. So they say that it doesn't exist. So that's a bit of ignorance as far as I'm concerned on the part of science.
In a way, they do have the instrument. Water is a good instrument because
mm-hmm.
it can measure consciousness. I mean, I even had an experience when I was living in Los Angeles, and my wife and I, and my to-be wife and I, Crystal, it's amazing I married a crystal.
I know.
Because it was my first hobby when I was a little kid.
Yeah, mine too.
I was traveling from the Bay Area in the 60s to Texas with my stepfather and picking up, stopping at these crystal shops along the highway. What was my thought? I lost my thought there.
Gosh,
what
were we talking about? Oh, about instruments to measure.
Right, about instruments to measure. Well, when we were trying to decide, we were going to either move to Sedona or Taos, Santa Fe, or Boulder. And when we were, you know, talking at night about going to Taos, because I had spent a year there working on sustainable housing,
mm-hmm.
my glass of water next to the bed, I could hear a voice. It was a woman's voice. Speaking through the glass of water, and it said not to move to Taos, that there was too much violence there.
Really?
There is. I know people, very good people working on the airships there that were badly beaten by some gangs there. So the water was a medium. It was literally, I woke up and I heard the voice coming from the glass of water.
Isn't that amazing? It's amazing. Well, again, this is going in a totally different direction, but all of this is intriguing to me. You know, David, when you think about how water has been replete throughout all aspects of our history, our religious history, mythology, Greek mythology, to occultism and magical practices, scrying water, being able to glean messages from water, I've heard you talk about this before. You know, we look at religious ceremonies, rituals with water, including baptism and holy water. There's a clue here. And I think that's the epiphany I woke up to the other day when I said, my gosh, there is something fundamentally powerful and misunderstood about water. Water indeed is a medium. I'm clear about that to the point where I'm very careful. I tend to bring a glass of water to bed with me every night because I'll get up in the middle of the night and be thirsty. But it's recently I've wondered, you know, in my dream state or whatever I may be bringing to bed with me, is that water processing that information? And could it be bouncing it back to me? So I agree with you. I want to
I have to tell you this little story, because you've gone into so much fascinating information, but I want to tell you about a little experiment I did with your Sound of the Sun recording. One of the questions I had for you that I think I answered for myself is, you know, we look at Dr. Emoto's work and all the, sophisticated equipment that he's used to be able to flash freeze water to show that structurally it's changing after being exposed to certain information. And I thought to myself, you know, for the average person that wants to prove to themselves that something is happening after you expose water to whether it be intention, feeling, or the sound of the sun, how might we determine that? So here's what I didn't. I want to get your thoughts on this. I have also been a fan of the dowsing process using a pendulum. I actually use a copper pendulum to douse over crystals to just kind of get an idea of their movement and stability. And so I said, wow, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a glass of water, because I do drink one glass of water, solar restructured water, every day. I'm going to take a glass of water prior to putting it in front of that speaker, and I'm going to douse over it just to take notice of its movement. David, it gave me a very precise, about a 12-degree oscillation, very specific. And so I made a mental note of that. I then put that glass of water in front of the sound of the sun. I usually play the recording twice, so it's a little over 2 minutes. And after I put that water in front of the sound of the sun, I brought it back, I put the pendulum over it, and the movement changed specifically, in this case, to a counterclockwise, very emphatic counterclockwise motion, proving to me that it had changed structurally. I can't tell you how excited I was when I did this experiment. This was just yesterday. I did it again today, same process. I got the same exact movement. The before movement was about a 12-degree oscillation. And then after I played the sound of the sun, the same exact movement as yesterday, a very emphatic counterclockwise motion. I had to get that in. I wanted to share that with you because I am thrilled. That proved to me something's taking place here.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
Isn't that amazing? Oh my God. So I was like, I can't wait to tell David. And this was just, and it's so funny how I think, and I'm digressing a little bit, but I wanted to just share this with you.
Well, that's a very important, because I never thought of doing that test. I mean, we took wheatgrass trays and we grew a sample of wheatgrass normally. And then we, next to another sample that we soaked the seeds in water and played the sound of the sun sonically through the wand, because I hadn't had the wand last summer. And the sound of the sun grass was so much richer and greener and taller than the other sample. And I even had a farmer who, and this is a really amazing story, in California, it was not this past winter, the winter before, when there was blight that affected, the winter was so cold, they lost all their tomato crops in the greenhouses. Mm-hmm. A lot of companies were. And the guy who played the sound of the sun to the water, his tomatoes beat the blight.
Wow.
He made a lot of money on his tomatoes because nobody else had any.
Right. Wow.
So he's actually became like a total freak about the sound of the sun discovery of mine, and now he's got it in all his greenhouses, and he's playing it to the water.
Well, I'm also a gardener, and you can only imagine how I'm going to be using the sound of the sun to charge my water or to restructure my water for the gardens. We had very little snow in the Northeast this year, which was bizarre, and I know it's going to hurt the crops, so I plan on, I also grid my garden with crystals. And I did a little process of, maybe I'll tell you another time, but this year I will be using restructured water. But try that experiment. Oh my gosh, I was so amazed.
No, I'll do that. I mean, I'm not very, I know somebody who's good at dowsing.
I mean, all you need is a pendulum. Just, you know, just a little, you can either get a, I'm sure you have one. All it is a string with something weighted at the bottom. It doesn't matter what it is. And
well,
then
one of the things that just happened, I mean, we've been talking about the radiation in Fukushima, and I've had a lot of friends who moved from Sedona to Maui and to Kauai, and where the government has admitted they've detected high levels of radiation in the milk that are above the government safety standards. And we can see the Europeans are tracking the radiation in the ocean. And it took about a year, but a huge amount of radiation is engulfing the Hawaiian Islands right now.
Wow.
And We already know from government tests at EPA that they tested the seaweed off the coast of California and found highly, I mean, I'm really educated in the nuclear sciences, so I've done a lot of radio shows where I've educated people about what are true safe levels of radiation.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with the Nobel Prize winners under the Atomic Energy Commission and Seaborg. And Seaborg hired this guy named John Goffman, a physicist at Berkeley, to do human health studies on ionizing radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And he submitted his report, and his safety levels were so low that the government had to reject them because they wanted to build a lot of nuclear power plants in America, and they said, well, we can't accept your levels because he's saying that about 67 counts per minute on a meter is the beginning of where you're going to get a lot of cancer,
mm-hmm.
about 30,000 cases of cancer in America. Well, by those standards, California right now is at 60 almost every day.
Wow.
And here in Sedona, we're supposed to be higher in radiation than the West Coast because we're high elevation. There's a natural amount of cosmic rays coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Where our counts this morning were 8. There's 60 in California almost every day because I have meters online that you can look at there, and I have my own meter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just got photos in from a friend of mine. He kind of didn't believe that the Hawaiian Islands were so bad. He went there and took pictures of the plants. They're all deformed.
Oh, my goodness.
Leaves. I mean, I'm looking at photos of leaves right now that are severely damaged, like all these boils and bubbles all over the leaves from
active
rain.
And it's actually, you can measure the cause or the effect that it is coming from
radiation.
Well,
you know, it's radiation, because radiation is a mutator. This can only be happened through severe chemical pollution in the rain or... So,
what about let me just ask you, what about the anomalous solar activity we've been having?
Wouldn't do this.
It wouldn't.
Those levels don't even show up on they show up on my tri-field meter in the electric mode,
mm-hmm.
when you get some severe solar activity, but my EMF meter and my nuclear meter will not even register anything, very little change from some pretty major solar activity.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening in Maui right now, these deformities are so bad, and we know that plants send signals faster than light from Prince Albert Pop, and we know they're in the plants on the planet are in this kind of collective field going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even measure the millivolts of plants by putting, you know, a voltmeter in millivolt mode, the red and the, you stick the black wire in the ground and the positive on the plant. And humans, the same. You can measure, you know, we've measured the millivolts of over 1,000 people in person at trade shows. And we can see humans, you know, range between a really low human might be 5 millivolts on the surface of their fingers to some people are at 50.
Mm-hmm.
Very rare. Somebody's actually at 50. And to 100 sometimes on the fingertips. And with our pendants, they go much higher than that. Well, what's interesting is we're all connected. We know that the plants are sending out these signals in their now deformed state in Maui with all the other plants in the world. And we know from the Secret Life of Plants movie that when plants start communicating with each other, they get freaked out.
Right.
Like, hey, something wrong is happening, you know, to me here.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
right.
And once again, there is a way of using my transmitters on a large scale and putting them into force to right away start sending in harmonic signals back into them so that some of this damage can be mitigated. Because once you mutate a species, DNA, there's nothing today known that can correct damage in human DNA and human DNA and plant DNA.
Hmm.
That species, that seed lot, becomes no good.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be burned.
Hmm.
It doesn't correct itself. It doesn't get better. It's DNA... mutation radiation is not a virus. So the only hope we have is to put these transmitters and transmit the sound of the sun, which is amplifying. I mean, right now the sound is being transmitted from the sun to the earth. It's the master of the solar system.
Sure.
But it needs to be more concentrated in these areas of severe radiation.
I understand that.
So like your experiment that you did,
mm-hmm.
with the you know, there's so much evidence that the center of the sun is the great harmonizer of the solar system.
I have always intuitively sensed that the sun is giving us a lot more than meets the eye.
Absolutely, no, it's, I mean, we're living in a time now where we, you know, we've done so much damage to the planet. We're following Reactor 4 so closely that as soon as my meters go off here, we may literally have to move to the southern hemisphere. That's what Helen Caldicott said, that she will move her whole family if Reactor 4 goes to the southern hemisphere, and there's a nuclear engineer named Arne Gunderson who said the same. God, you will not survive here, and children will not be able to survive in the western. I mean, there's a top medical journal, and this actually made Fox News. It said, Fox News, a doctor in Fox News said that in Philadelphia, the infant mortality rate went up 45% after Fukushima. And because, and they timed it with the arrival of radionuclides showing up in the rainwater in Philadelphia. For some reason, they got a lot of radiation there. We didn't get any in Sedona. I have meters there. I'm following it all the time. And in the rain in California, they got 1,400 counts a minute. Here, we didn't even reach 70 steadily. We had a few spikes of 70, but it wasn't more than a couple of seconds. Well, 100 counts a minute is alert status. So 1,400 counts in the rain in California is unacceptable. And what I'm saying here, we're living in a time with the Gulf oil spill, what was happening, what happened in Japan, what the earth changes that are coming upon us, that we either need millions of serious meditators who understand the Emoto effect, who understand that, you know, sometimes you need to see the signs.
Yes.
Like the movie Water, to make you realize, okay, I needed to see some proof that my thoughts were really powerful. Before I'm going to invest hours and hours and hours of meditation to bring harmony to the planet.
Right.
I believe our situation is so critical with Reactor 4, we should all be doing global meditations.
Yeah.
To pray for peace to the earth in Japan.
Absolutely.
That they don't get another big earthquake, because it'll knock that thing right over.
Yeah, no, I agree. And isn't it true that that they may be heading for just that, based on a confluence of circumstances? You know, with the high solar activity, I mean, we're at a solar
maximum. Well, we have a sunspot facing Earth now.
Do we?
It is so brutal looking. It's capable of X-class flares for sure.
Really?
Oh, yeah. For the next 4 days, we're in a window of severe danger.
I didn't know that. I usually get alerts. I have...
Oh, it's a big one. It's a group of sunspots that are so bad.
Really?
Yeah, they're really bad. They're definitely, I mean, spaceweather.com has clearly said it's capable of X-class flares, but I've seen, when Fukushima happened, when the 9-point earthquake hit, there was a group of four nasty-looking magnetic fields, and one of them erupted. It takes 3 days for the plasma wave of charged particles to hit the Earth, and instantly Japan had a 7.2, and then 3 days later they had the 9.
Yeah.
That was four really nasty-looking magnetic fields. I mean, right now, you know, we're looking at one group of sunspots. You don't always get a sunspot attached to a nasty magnetic field. You don't necessarily need an eruption from the sun, a CME, to produce large earthquakes.
Right.
You just need the presence of some very unstable magnetic field lines to cause some things to move down here. I mean, it's very simple. It's photoelectrics. You know, you get charged particles hit the Earth, and the Earth's conductive material and semiconductive material responds to it. So,
what's your internal sense? What's your intuitive sense about what we're facing in the next, with this next set of possible flares coming up?
Well, my intuitive sense is that there are going to be a lot of severe Earth changes between now and about 2024. You're looking at. It's not just about 2012. There's a lot of other data that I have.
Sure.
Earth may not stabilize again for a long time.
Wow.
And it's a very sensitive system. We've done a lot of damage to it. You know, I have solar panels. I've planted over a million trees myself. I've done everything I can.
Yeah.
There's not enough people even buying the solar panels. I mean, we rent our house. We don't own a house.
Mm-hmm.
And I just told my landlord, I'm putting these solar panels up. Mm-hmm. I got 800 watts here, and I'm running all my computers, lights, the blender, juicer, the TV in the bedroom. I don't have enough power to run the air conditioning, which we use part of the year, but you know, that's the most I can afford.
Right, right.
I'm doing what we can. I'm also selling electric bicycles. I sell them.
Wow.
If people are interested, they can contact me.
Yeah, I'm going to put a link, obviously, to wherever you need me to put it.
Yeah, my links are lightstreamtechnologies.com, which is where people can get pendants and the wand. My movies are at voiceentertainment.net. And if somebody wants an electric bicycle to reduce their carbon footprint, just write David, S-E-R-E-D-A, at hotmail.com.
We thank you for coming on the journey with this, our first audio broadcast. If you'd like to learn more about David Sarita and his work, please click on the links provided in this blog post. And we look forward to journeying with you once again.